time again for everyone to gather around their favorite internet-based audio source. It is episode 16 of the Development Hell podcast. So how you doing today, Ed?
I'm doing okay. I probably should have did this earlier because now I'm feeling tired, but I tried to jack myself up on dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate with sea salt. Yeah, you have me feeling like tomorrow.
That stuff's really good, dog. You need to get some of that.
I will go out tomorrow in my brand new spanking car and go pick some of that up tomorrow.
Didn't you buy a super expensive car?
Well, yeah, because that's how I roll now. Right. Being Mr. World famous international speaker and testing guy, I get to roll with a nice set of wheels.
Right.
It's more like I forced it upon my wife and said, shut up, this is what I want this time. So
this testing book paid for my Dodge Neon. I was trying to think of like a cheap car, but
smart car.
Chevy Nova.
A Yugo. That's what
you know. Those smart cars are not nearly as inexpensive as you'd think. You'd look at it and you're like, this is $3,000
tops.
$2,000 or $3,000, right? Yeah. No, they're I think kind of expensive considering. Like they're essentially a scooter with a shield wrapped around you. Right?
That's very true. So before we get going, let's thank our wonderful sponsors from Engine Yard. Woo! They sent us more money, and Ed's PayPal me some of the money. Woo! So this is good.
Drinks.
And Engine Yard was at Lone Star PHP, which I'm going to talk about later. And there's some awesome pictures of me floating around on the internet now of wearing a foam cowboy hat.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
It was awesome. So thank you very much, Engine Yard. For those who don't know Engine Yard is one of the trailblazers and leaders of the in the platform as a service market, and they do wonderful things with our buddies from Orchestra.io, which is their PHP as a service platform. So if you're looking to jump onto the platform as a service wagon and, you know, maybe think about what you're doing after the whole Amazon outages on the weekend, just be careful what you're doing, but if you want to do PHP stuff, specific stuff, I can't think of anyone better than to go with Orchestra and the folks at Engine Yard.
Yeah, what you said.
Yeah, and Liz told me she actually does listen now, so she knows what she's getting.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice of her to pay any attention to us.
All right, so on our last episode, our after-school special, you talked about your various narcotics that you take and
yes,
your mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, right.
You wanted to talk a little bit about the – just kind of follow up on what we had talked about. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the main thing that I wanted to say was that I got a ton of really good feedback and good in the sense that, as far as I know, no one at least directly made fun of me, which was nice. I mean, that at least was meant it in like a cruel way. Nobody did that. Oh, fuck this guy. Sorry. Bedrich just showed up. So that was really good, but, so I had some folks who publicly, I guess, you know, on Twitter or something says, you know, really that you're doing good, that it was important that we talk about this. I think that was the thing that I kept hearing, was that it was important that we talk about this and that people don't talk about it enough and stuff like that. Somebody pointed out, you know, one thing that somebody pointed out to me, why can't I think of this guy's name? It was the guy who founded StatusNet, Evan Pradmer.
Yeah,
some French name.
Promodomo. I forget. Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I think didn't he make some kind of like task like productivity system? Promodomo.
He might have.
All right. So anyway, and he looks like the. Yeah, fuck. I'm obviously out of it because I can't think of the band. He looks like some guy in a band who everybody says that, and he'd be mad at me for even saying it. So
Michael Stipe.
Oh God, no.
Because he's got the shaved head.
No, he's that song about like I will buy you a garden way up in the west, something like that, right?
Wow, no, I don't know that one at all. So
big '90s hit. They had some hits.
All right, well, whatever.
Bro. Song about his dad. His dad left him, and then some song. I don't know. Some stuff. Somebody's gonna say it, but I can't think of it. Anyway, he talked about that. It's not just stuff. Yeah, we need to talk about this stuff, but you know, some people, they're actually, I mean, and there, you know, he mentioned some people who are in the development community, open source community, who have, we've lost from suicide. And, you know, I think the most, one that I can think of most recently that I was sort of aware of was one of the developers for, I'm probably going to screw up how you pronounce this, Diaspora.
I remember that.
He was just like a 21-year-old kid, right? And he had committed suicide, and it was, you know, I don't know anything about the circumstances about, you know, what was going on, so I don't want to speculate about that stuff. But it's not uncommon. I wonder, but I have no evidence to demonstrate that. I wonder if people who do this kind of work and are attracted to this kind of work maybe are also sometimes the same kind of people who have a tendency maybe to suffer from this stuff, personality types and things like that. But it's just, you know, kind of talked about like trying to do more, like trying to figure out like how to talk more about this stuff. And we're still kind of kicking that around. I don't have anything to say, like I don't have any, some kind of announcement or something like that about it or whatever. But I would like to really hear from folks who have ideas about that. Like we sort of started, like he set up a wiki, maybe we'll throw some ideas on there or something like that. But, the basic thing is that I want to be able to talk more about this stuff and kind of raise awareness of it. And I guess one of the big things is I had a lot of people come to me and say, yeah, what you're saying sounds really familiar, or what you're saying, that sounds like me, right? And I kind of got the impression that these are folks who, you know, some of them were only like two people know about it. I had people talk to me privately. It's like, oh, my wife is the only person who knows anything about this, or my girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. So I guess one of the things that you know, I wonder about is trying to talk about this stuff and sort of getting rid of the stigma attached to it, so that it is stuff we can deal with better. And I kind of feel like if we're sort of more comfortable with it, it becomes less of a thing we have to hide and a thing we have to be sort of ashamed of. So I'm going to keep trying to do that. And I, you know, as people, if they've got ideas, I really would like to hear them, you know, thoughts about like what would help them, you know, what do they wish there was more of, So anyway, that's mainly the follow up at this point. But it's something I really kind of want to keep pushing on and maybe talk about at, you know, if there are some conference things that come up or stuff like that, maybe I'll have an opportunity to do that. So, yeah, that's basically it. But, you know, it seemed like it kind of did what I hoped it would do, which was get people talking about it and sort of, you know, thinking about those things. Also, man, I haven't checked, but I'm pretty sure it was like by far our most downloaded episode, like by far.
That would not surprise me at all if it was. Just getting people to talk about this, to realize that it is a problem. And I think more importantly, helping people to understand that if they do have a problem, if they are having mental health issues, that they need to get help, and they need to, and there are plenty of places they can find. And I think this is the important part: find non-judgmental help, right? Because that's really what you want. You want someone who's going to be sympathetic to what you're going through and wants to help you, and is not, tough love is not the way to handle mental health issues. Right. So for so many people, that is their solution. Telling people you got to man up, suck it up, don't be a baby, all those sort of labels that people who experience these issues sometimes get thrown at them. So, right. So again, if you're listening and you listen to the last one, I highly encourage you to, if you find yourself experiencing a lot of the symptoms that Ed talked about, or if you just need someone to talk to about these things, there are plenty of highly trained professionals who are out there just waiting for you and waiting to help you. And again, in a non-judgmental,
just waiting for you, fashion. Right? So, just waiting outside in the car, just waiting for you in the parking lot
with a white jacket with arms that are sewn together. Yeah, that type of thing.
Right. Yeah.
No, that's only half joking. They'll be waiting for you, but it's not like, with the straight jacket.
It's like that. I don't know if you ever saw that Saturday Night Live bit where Will Ferrell was like, he was this nude model. But he was in like an art class, like a drawing class or a painting class, something like that. But he was like really, really vulgar and disgusting. And
so like, I haven't seen that one.
I remember he ended. Well, he did it. He did this character a couple times. But he ended this one bit where it was like, "I'll be out in the parking lot waiting to give you hepatitis.
Yeah, that sounds like a Will Ferrell routine right there.
Yeah, that's a favorite of my wife's, actually. So, yeah.
I think that says a lot about your wife. But let's move on.
Yes. Well, and
so the other thing you want to talk about, we were talking about this briefly before we started recording, was that you were using a new tool to put the show together afterwards, and so you were going to launch into a rant about the previous tool. And I told you to save it for the podcast. So you're using this thing now called Reaper to do the audio production.
Yeah. So Reaper's pretty cool. Talk a bit about it. Reaper's pretty cool. I think the thing that's neat about it is it's pretty inexpensive. There's a commercial license and a discounted license. That you can use the discounted one if you're an individual using personal use, or you are using it for commercial use. Gross revenue doesn't exceed $20,000. I had to look at that, or your educational nonprofit. It's a really powerful multi-track digital audio workstation. And what if you don't know anything about that, what that usually means is that it can do multi-track audio. Where, if you've ever seen video editing stuff, like where you're laying like video tracks down and maybe you're doing mixing between them or things like that, or laying them over stuff, it's sort of the same kind of thing. Right. So you're just doing it with audio. Because I used to do a lot more music stuff, I'm pretty familiar with it. With digital audio workstation stuff, usually what they do is they combine both doing audio work, which means playing back recorded audio or recording audio and then, say, passing it through effects or doing editing on it, splice it, cut it up, stuff like that. But also it'll do control of via MIDI or other ways of instruments. So you can control synthesizers, other devices like that with it too, right? So it can do both. Like, usually what it is it's doing MIDI handling stuff, for which is just like instructions that you send out to devices, and then also like real audio stuff too. So it's a pretty cool little tool, and the evaluation version is not crippled in any way. It is, but it gives you, it just bugs you about it. And I've used it a couple times, pretty good. So $60 is a pretty good deal for it.
Wow, that's it. Yeah, that sounds like a good price.
Yeah, like you could, if you knew what you were doing, you could certainly record, full albums of work with it. With that and some outboard equipment, you could do anything you needed to, full tracks with vocals, guitar, all that shit, right? I mean, so you could certainly do it. Obviously you need a little bit of outboard equipment, but you can totally do it with this kind of thing. I've used some other things in the past. Like I record like Cakewalk Audio, which was a Windows product that then went into a product called Sonar. But if you've messed with things like Cubase or Logic Audio Pro, which is now an Apple product, it used to be a separate company, but they bought that several years back. Logic might be good if you're on OS X, because now you can buy it through the App Store, and they discounted it hugely. Like, that used to be a several hundred dollar program, and I think it's like $100 now, or $130, right? I should look that up and see how much Logic.
I guess all it takes is one high quality tool to knock their prices down, and a lot of other vendors feel they need to drop their prices too, I guess.
Yeah, or they might just go out of business. Apple's kind of like not exactly screwing them, but they dropped their prices dramatically when they moved to the App Store stuff.
Right.
Like, Logic Pro is the audio equivalent of like Final Cut, right?
Okay.
And so Logic is a professional tool, and they dropped. It used to be like a $600 or $700, $800 product, and they dropped it to now it looks like it's $200. But that's still $200 to $60 is a pretty big difference. Logic comes with a bunch of other shit, so if you want to do music stuff, it might be a better thing to start with. But Reaper's a pretty cool tool, so for $60. I was using this thing called Wave Edit, and it was okay, but I just had a lot of, I don't know, I actually paid for it, right? It was $80 or $90, but it was just, I always had hassles with it, and I would run into bugs where it would like not actually save my stuff. And it would take longer to do the production on the podcast than I needed it to. Not that I need it to, but then I thought it should. And I'm able to do it faster with Reaper. So all in all, I think it's kind of a win. So this is obviously not a programming topic, but I actually think Reaper's pretty cool. So
hey, it's our show, and we can talk about whatever we want.
And Reaper, you can get it for Mac or Windows. So if you're on either one of those, it works fine. I don't think it will work on Linux, but I think it's Mac and Windows product.
But really, do you expect to be able to do serious audio editing work on Linux? That seems like you're kind of asking for a humongous fight and struggle.
Well, you're asking for a fight with the same kinds of dudes who tell you that the GIMP is just as good as anything else. Like, you'll say, well, you can't do serious work. And they'll say, the GIMP. Well, there's like some tools. There are some tools for Linux for doing audio work, but realistically, no. You really, like, the tools are much better on Windows and Mac. They're about equivalent. It used to be the case that, like, everybody did everything on Mac, but it's really not that way now. There's tons of good stuff for Windows.
All right, so that's Reaper. So the next topic is
that was awesome.
Web. You've been playing around with a little web-based IDE called Cloud9. And before you talk about that, I wanted to talk about my own actual recent experimentations with different editors.
Oh, yeah.
I know I'm probably going to be shot in a drive-by for this, but I've actually started moving away from Vim as my normal editor, and I've been using Sublime Text 2 at the recommendations of Git expert extraordinaire Travis Swicegood.
I've been playing with it
using what they call vintage mode, which lets you move around inside Sublime Text 2 with the Vim keystrokes that I'm used to, and I gotta say I'm liking it. It feels smooth and responsive, and I'm still using Vim for things, but I'd say I'm probably doing 80% Sublime Text and 20% Vim. The main thing I'm using Vim these days for is quick little edits on the servers at work, and for my test reviews at Kaplan, I use Vim with a plugin that lets me do directory diffs so that I can compare. So I'll check out code. I'll check out, because we have to do comparisons against our default branch and then the branch that people have been doing work in. So I have to have two separate checkouts of the code, and then I use Vim to bring them together and do a comparison so I can see what's changed. It does a diff, but a directory-based diff, so I can see all the files that have changed, and I can pass silent judgment on people's shitty coding style and yell at them when their tests don't look right.
Yes. I think.
But yeah, I'm liking Sublime Text too. I'm liking it.
I told you to use that well before you listened to Travis about that.
Well, I've just been kind of lurking, watching how other people have been using it to get an idea of the most common plugins and stuff that people are using, just to get a feel for it. And now that it's gone public with 2.0, I feel confident enough to try to use it in a very serious way.
Yeah, like, I wonder what the future will be like, if it'll end up like TextMate, which development on the main product basically stagnated. But it sort of has the potential for that, because it's all done by one guy, right? Like,
yeah.
There's one guy who does it, and I don't really understand how he can develop for three different platforms and just be that dude, like one guy doing it. But right now it's really awesome, because there's tons of people working on it. I think it's a really good tool. I guess for me, I feel like it's kind of an extension. It's not too dissimilar from what TextMate has been like. It's sort of like if TextMate continued adding new core features to it, you know, and still had that really strong plugin system for doing add-ons and junk like that, and maybe even a better one. I guess up for discussion, but it's really cool. I really like it. We use it a ton. So
I'll say one more thing, and then we'll let you talk about Cloud9. I help Sublime Text 2 to sort of be able to keep going and keep the momentum and not become the Duke Nukem forever text editor like TextMate became, is keep the core tiny and figure out ways for people to do all their extensions and improvements through plugins. And that would mean that the core guy wouldn't have to worry about it too much, and everyone could just go nuts doing plugins. So enough about how I'm starting to like Sublime Text 2. So let's talk about Cloud9.
So Cloud9's kind of cool. Like, I guess for a while I've sort of followed web-based editing, but I'll tell you, I've never been happy with it ever, because I think that there's always something that goes wrong where you run into something that a browser does that is not what you'd want it to do if it was a text editor, you know, because it's a browser, not a text editor. And, like, it's like some keystroke, like a keystroke that you're used to using to do something in text, like, is overridden and, like, goes back in your history instead of, like, jumping to the beginning of the line or something like that, right? You know? And that's always kind of a hassle, but, and so I messed around some different things, like, before. Like, there was actually a pretty good product that, like, all the rest of the stuff that was related to WebOS that HP eventually, you know, just basically shit the bed and didn't do anything with. But they had a really cool cloud-based IDE for WebOS that it was actually pretty cool. It, like, used a little Java applet. And I know you've all turned off your radios after hearing that. But it would actually, it could run a debugger. And, like, so you'd run it in your browser, and then it would, and you'd be editing code and, like, say out of a Git repo, but it could actually install and do step debugging on your device, like, through, like, Java interface, right? So, presumably, it interfaced with the SDK tools that you installed locally, right? But it was pretty cool, right? And it had some ability to do visual layouts and stuff like that. So, it was called Ares, A-R-E-S. And that was pretty cool. So I should probably put that in the notes. But Ares was actually pretty interesting. I never actually ended up doing real editing in Ares because I always felt like it was just too much of a pain to do the typing. Like, it was never fast enough, and it was never, like, it was always kind of clunky to do real editing in it. But it was, you know, okay. And I did use the debugger a lot because it was the best debugger for WebOS apps. By far. Like, you could actually do real step debugging in it, and that it was the best product for that, right? And it was free. That was pretty cool, too. So Cloud9 is sort of like, I'm not sure if it's in any way related to, there's been a bunch of different projects like Bespin and other things.
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
The one I was going to mention. I was going to say, I wonder if it's an outgrowth, if it's like a natural progression from Bespin, because that's probably the one that most people, if they know anything about web-based IDEs, they probably have heard of Bespin.
Right. So Bespin, like, was kind of cool. I'm sort of not 100% clear about, like, how they're related, whether this was completely developed in-house or not, so I've sort of followed it, and I messed with Cloud9 like a while back, like a year ago, and it was okay. Like, you could do some editing, and it has some integration. Like, you can integrate with GitHub, and so that or Bitbucket, which I think I have a Bitbucket account, but I haven't really used it. But for GitHub, I did actually. You can integrate with it, so you can hook into your GitHub repos. And clone your repository and do editing and then push stuff back and things like that. I think that one of the things. So I sort of messed with it today because I had been thinking about pair programming. The reason why I messed with it today, thinking about pair programming, was they just released some new updates to it that added some stuff like, and one of the big things is like real time collaborative editing.
Oh, okay, cool.
So that's pretty cool, right? Like, so you could, like, if it's a public project, you can just invite anybody, as many people as you want to it, and you can say, like, oh, this person, they have to have an account, at least, so they have to actually sign up. But there's a base free account, right? And if they have an account, they can actually edit stuff. Like, you can give them write access. If they don't have an account, you can just look at what's going on, but you can't actually edit anything, right? So the thing, so that gets kind of interesting because I've been thinking about pair programming and remote stuff. I'm not a good enough Vim user, so that, like, using Vim and Screen or something like that wasn't really a great option for me, but this looked like it might be kind of cool. But I was pretty impressed with it. Like, you can, now the only thing I messed around with was doing Node on it, but you can actually do, you can run it as like a develop, you can run like a development server, and not just on Node, but it, I think you can do, I'm going to bring this up because I actually have a project in here, and, let's see here, start editing, right? And I think you can pick it and say, like, oh, I want to run this as a Python, like a bunch of different things. Like, I want to run this as a Python project. Yeah, run and debug. So the runtimes are Node.js, Apache and PHP, PHP CLI, Python or Ruby, right?
Man, that's pretty good variety.
Yeah, so it's not something you do your hosting on, but it is like a legitimate development server, and I actually got a not entirely trivial application working on it, like with a Node backend, a real simple Node backend, but then a backbone.js, you know, front end thing, and it actually runs. All right?
That sounds kind of cool.
Right, and it's got a console, and I was able to like run npm commands to install stuff, and you can do other stuff too. It's pretty sophisticated, really. There's the editor is pretty strong. You can do some multiple selection stuff. There's a Vim mode, right? You can do different like color modes, which is something that if you mess with Sublime,
you had me at Vim mode.
Yeah, I know, right? That's all I had to say.
That sounds good. It reminds me. It makes me wish that maybe Subether Edit was still alive and kicking.
Right. I kind of sort of think it is. I mean, it's around, but I don't know how it's being developed. Right. I sort of looked at it a little bit in reference to, you know, thinking about doing pair programming, but it looked like it was going to be hard. But it's pretty cool. Like, I was actually able to make some changes to a project at work, as one that's a public Git repo, but with some changes, and was able to push it up, you know, all from the Cloud9 editor. So there's some things that I wish were there. Like, I've really fallen in love with in Sublime Text 2 with split editing, where basically I always split it so I've got two side by side files usually, so then I can see two files at once, which I really like that a lot, and it doesn't do that, which would be nice. It does have some capability of doing like offline work, so if you're not online, I think it can do some kind of syncing stuff. I don't know 100% how it works, but supposedly, at least in Node, you can even do like debugging stuff, like stepping through things. I'm not sure. I didn't get that working, but anyway, I guess the point is, it was worth it was worth looking into. I wouldn't use it as my main editor just because I really like Sublime Text and I'm really comfortable with that. And I would feel that editor wise, I was losing a fair bit of stuff, but there's some pretty cool stuff for code hinting and syntax highlighting, stuff like that. It's pretty impressive for a web-based tool. For something running on the browser, they have really done a pretty impressive job. So I could reasonably see somebody being pretty productive with this. Like, I think they could do all their work in this if they wanted to.
That's a bold statement, Ed.
Yeah, I think I could work. I think I can work faster in Sublime Text, but a lot of that has to do with me being used to it, right? So, there's not necessarily a huge win out of it. I suspect what we'll end up probably doing is, if we do use this, we'll do like pair programming stuff, like on an occasional basis via this tool. So we wouldn't use it like all the time. But you could reasonably do real production, like professional work with this thing. And so, yeah, I'm pretty impressed with it. I think it's worth checking out. There's a free thing, and then there's like a pay for that has, you know, a certain number of private stuff. And you can, you know, set up with unlimited collaborators or whatever. So it's a pretty cool tool. So, you know, especially for folks who are doing remote work, I think the collaboration stuff is really, like, that stuff really ends up being kind of a killer feature. So I think it's definitely reasonable. If you're doing, like, if you're working with a remote team, it would definitely be worth looking into, I think.
That's cool.
Yep.
As things keep going, these, it seems that the goal of a editor in the cloud becomes, I have to have a drink every time I say cloud, becomes more and more possible.
Yeah. Like, the funny thing is, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm like, well, you know, this would be great if it just wasn't in the browser. Like, because I sort of think to myself, there's some advantages to it being in the browser, because I bet it's really accessible in a lot of ways. Like, right? Like, I could go to, like, if I didn't have my laptop with me, I was just at some shanky hotel. I could get onto like one of their machines there and log in, and if they maybe had a, I'm not sure if they support Internet Explorer, like which versions they support, so I'd have to look at that. But if I could get a semi-reasonable browser on that machine, I could actually do work and have everything there in the browser. So that's like, I guess, the big advantage, right? Like, the disadvantage is kind of like, stuff, it's sometimes I just feel like it's a little easier to screw stuff up. Like in the browser, like you accidentally close it, and then, oh shit, I lost my work, and maybe you do and maybe you don't. They seem like they've done a pretty decent job with keeping everything there, so I think it's really worth checking out. I was very impressed with this tool, and I think the pricing is not unreasonable for even for the pay for stuff.
That sounds cool, man.
Right. So yeah.
So, all right, yeah, so Cloud9, check it out. We'll have it in the show notes, how you can get it. I did manage to find the URL for SubEthaEdit. So good news, the site is still there. Bad news, their last blog post is from June of 2011. So
right.
Take that whatever way that you want. I remember using it. I remember thinking it was an awesome tool for actually doing collaborative programming, because I do remember using it way back when, 2000 and... got to be 2004, 2005.
Right.
Period.
That's been around a long time, bro.
Sure has.
PowerPC days.
All right. So now let me talk about the editors. And actually, we're doing pretty good for time, so we may be able to get more done than we thought. So now we can talk about Lone Star PHP 2012.
Right.
I was making up some of their Canadian content along with Joel Perrault, as I found out his last name is correctly pronounced. Lone Star PHP was this past Friday and Saturday down in Addison, Texas, which is is in Dallas, Texas, and not too far from the airport, if I remember correctly. Although they just drove around on all our highways on the way there.
Right.
So I gave two talks. I did a talk on building testable applications, and that one went really well, complete with an impromptu standing ovation, because I talked about testing in terms of like time and dedication. I tried to relate it to my astounding weight loss and saying I never thought I could get the weight loss thing going. But again, it was just time and dedication. And people stood up and clapped, and I said in true fashion, like, oh, it's no big deal. I just have to ignore my wife yelling at me that the diet's going to kill me. So,
right.
And both talks went really well. And I would say for like what is – it's not really a regional conference. It's getting to be a little bit bigger than a regional conference. There was a hell of a lineup.
Right.
A lot of the what I would call heavy hitters in the PHP world came out to the conference.
The heavy hitters.
Well, yeah, like recognizable names.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I was there, and Joel, Paul Jones gave a keynote, Cal Evans gave a keynote, Davey Shafiq was there, Liz Marie Smith. If you looked at the schedule, there are like a lot of people. Keith Casey was there. A lot of names, you know, that people who follow the PHP community a little bit. Derek Rethins was there talking about some of the cool shit he's been doing with the Open Map stuff, which is really, really – I'm finding really, really interesting.
Oh, yeah. He's been
so, yeah, like for what you could consider the second edition of a regional conference, I had a hell of a good time.
Right. So, and you were also there.
And I was there. But that, you know, anytime the stars are there, they got to throw me into there just to remind people.
Yeah, right.
Of the high caliber of people that they've got there.
Well, there's a curve. You're great on the curve. Somebody
that's right. I know I'm at the low end.
You're right.
Or the high end of the curve, depending on who you talk to. But
yeah,
I was very happy to be there, and the talk went really, really well. They even like it was kind of weird how they had set. They had like one really big room and
right.
then one smaller room. So the one really big room, you were like on a raised platform, and they had like two big ass screens where things were being projected. So
wow.
I didn't get to do my full 22nd century presentation technique, but I did just bring the iPad with me. So I ran my presentation off the iPad with Keynote.
Right.
With the Keynote remote, and just to avoid the inevitable crappy conference Wi-Fi, there's actually a way to get the phone and the iPad talking to each other via Bluetooth, and I could run the presentation that way. So
it
seemed to be a lot more reliable, and I got tons of really good feedback through Joindin, and people enjoyed my unique presentation style.
Unique. Yeah, that's one way.
Unique.
To put it.
Yeah. I'm thinking, though, next time I give that testable talk, I'm going to find myself a rainbow clown wig and wear that.
That is an excellent idea.
Yes, I think I'm going to do that the next time I give that talk. Although I don't know if I'm going to do that at the Swedish talk. That seems to be a little bit disrespectful of a conference like that when I'm in Sweden in November.
So you are going to Sweden.
I think if I do it again at a PHP one, I'm going
to
do that.
I think it'll be interesting to see it, like the join-in ratings there, because I've heard that in America, like just everybody, gives you 5 stars, right? Like they tend to rate
they
high.
Did, there were lots of fives and a few fours. So on the one hand, it's nice for the ego to get the nice high ratings. But it's kind of like I really wish that if you didn't like the talk, you would tell me and tell me what it was you didn't like about it. Because the whole goal for the feedback is not to tell us that we're awesome, because really we know that already. But
yes,
what we want to know is what they didn't like about the presentation and if there were topics that they were expecting to see covered. For example, one person gave me a 4, but they talked about they thought that my infrastructure debt talk that was going to be more about hardware and networking and stuff. So they were kind of like, oh, that wasn't what I expected. I enjoyed the talk, but I was expecting it to be something different. So that makes me wonder if the infrastructure debt label is not correct and I need to find like a better description of the thing that I'm talking about. So
right. Yeah. I've kind of heard – I heard somebody – maybe it was Lorna.
Lorna Jane?
Yeah, yep. Lorna Jane said this. Maybe it was about DPCon, the Dutch PHP conference.
Right.
Where they talk about, like, that the ratings that you get, like the average rating for a talk for, like, all the U.S. stuff is, like, 4, and the average rating at the – Dutch PHP conference was like a 2 or a 3.
Huh, interesting.
And so it was more like that they tend to just rate like lower, you know, like they kind of think, well, you were okay, you're a 3, right? And so I think what I want you, basically I want you to gird your loins when you go over there.
Well, I mean, I look at it this way. For that conference I'm going to in Sweden, I'm the only person there who's going to be talking about PHP. So I'm already, to use a good baseball metaphor, I got 2 strikes on me, and the ball's coming in, and I haven't decided whether I'm going to swing or not yet. So
right.
So I'm ready. I'm ready for that. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I don't mind getting bad ratings. It's like I don't mind it. I just want to know what it is that you didn't like. If you didn't like it,
right,
I'd like to know why. Because if I do that particular topic again, I would like to know how I can make it better and more interesting for people in the crowd.
Yeah, I usually feel like I can kind of tell like when a talk doesn't go well, sort of. I gave 2 talks at PHP Tech. I'm not sure if it's PHP Tech anymore or just Tech. One I thought went really well, and then the other one I felt like went way worse. And I got, like, the ratings didn't necessarily reflect that. They were, like, slightly lower for the other one. But I could tell that I was sort of talking, like, I didn't do enough, like to make this an intro. Like, the material was a little too advanced. And I wasn't really happy with how it turned out. And I don't know. So I think when you're a speaker, you can kind of tell how it goes. But I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I'll shut up. I don't know.
I agree that usually you can tell if the talk went well. I mean, I feel
right
the same way. When the first time I gave my Building Testable Apps talk at a conference was when I did it at CodeMash, and that one was like, yeah, I felt the audience wasn't quite into it, and that made me realize that I was just blasting too much info
right
out at them. And for my talk, when I did it this time at Lone Star, I basically got rid of about half material.
Yeah, I
tried to concentrate on more higher level stuff. But again, when you're talking about anytime you do a talk where you're talking about technology and specific use of the technology, I find it extremely hard to give people any kind of detailed info in just, you know, an hour's of talking.
Yeah.
This thing, I mean, building testable apps, that could easily be like a 6-hour tutorial session at a conference. Easily be that.
Yeah, I totally understand. I was wondering what was your kind of vibe about like Lone Star as kind of a community thing? Because, you know, there's sort of been a like I really wanted to go because I felt like maybe the I was kind of getting a thing like the vibe might have been a little bit like the PHP Community Conference in Nashville last year, and I was wondering kind of what you thought of it, sort of in terms of that. Did it feel like a did it feel like a little all for one conference?
Yeah, there was. I would say that there was like a really good community feel to it, because the thing about it is that the sponsors weren't up in your face all the time. Like, it was more like, we're here to hang out with all our friends, and we're here because we're all members of the PHP community, and a lot of the Cal's opening keynote really did a good job of putting that in perspective, the whole we're not normal thing that he did when he was at Tech. So yeah, it did have that feel to me of the PHP community conference, very, very similar. I mean, a lot of people asked me if you were coming or not, and I just said you know how Ed is, and too stressed out to fly and other stuff too. So, but I also told some people I was pretty sure that you, because I remember you told me before you had a family thing to go to.
Oh yeah, I couldn't have even gone because I was like triple booked for this, so I had to cancel two things no matter what. Because the family thing was like the thing I ended up having to do, and right. I was glad I was able to do it, but I wasn't like a huge burden. But
there was also Open Source Bridge or something.
Yeah, and I had bought. Yeah, I bought
the week before.
Yeah, I bought my ticket like 10 months ago for that. Right, so I would have had. You know, I was going to go to Open Source Bridge if I didn't have something else, because they were happening with it. Like, I think they crossed over, right? So
yeah,
I really would have loved to go to Lone Star, though. It looked like a really cool conference run by cool people, so
it definitely had that sort of community vibe to it. I think especially because, like, you had the two big rooms and then the hallway track was kind of interesting, but for the most part people kind of stuck in the session rooms. There wasn't a lot of people leaving, because really the conference wasn't near the hotel where most of the speakers or guests were staying. So it wasn't like you could just, oh, I'm just going to go back to my room and kind of hang out. Things like, you're at the conference and it would require a commitment to walk outside in the 100-degree heat if you're going to go back to the hotel. I did that a couple of times to go get stuff at the hotel, and I didn't melt into a puddle of Canadian grumpiness. So it worked out okay.
I get tired, man, at these things. Well, especially after I speak, I'm usually like really drained. But man, people are going to all these talks and stuff, and I just get tired, man. I want to go lie down, right? I got to take a nap in the middle of the day.
Yeah, during each day I did skip one session on each day to just kind of just chill on a couch. And just relax.
Pass
and not
out.
Worry about worry about either going to hear someone talk or worry about my presentations. So I think you would have had a good time there. It was very low key, and the guys they did a really good job of running it. Everything went smooth. There were no problems, which
That's
is
awesome.
All you can really ask for.
I think
as an organizer, as I start organizing True North PHP, which is the conference that I'm doing at the beginning of November, I'm hoping things go as smooth as Lone Star PHP went.
True North, huh? Is that like an alternate to Magnetic North PHP?
I never thought of that. No, True North. True North Strong and Free from the Canadian National Anthem.
We don't know that.
Yeah, I know.
That is not relevant.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah, and like Sean, because my coworker Sean is in the chat. He mentioned the food was amazing. It was.
So
barbecue on the one day, barbecue for lunch one day, Tex-Mex for lunch on the second day, plus lots of little nibbles and snacks for the after party. The after party was awesome. Tons of booze on Friday. Got to hang out and watch people make fools of themselves on Rock Band. And I played a game that you might be familiar with, Cornhole.
Cornhole is a big
– not the cornhole that you're thinking of, Ed.
No. Well, there's two kinds of cornhole down here. But the one we're talking about – is basically like a beanbag game, right?
That's the one.
Which is
I played a ton with Garrett Woodworth from good old Jiwoo, who's at EngineYard, and who I worked with many, many years ago when Cake Development Corporation, which is kind of the consulting company that one of the creators of Cake runs, when it first started up. And we formed an unstoppable team, and we were undefeated in 10 matches, he and I.
So I should clarify.
It was impressive.
I should clarify, it's not the beanbag game you're thinking of, not that game. But But no, I mean a game where you toss a fabric bag filled with beads or beans.
Yes. Yes, at a long board that has a big hole in it.
Into a wooden, board, usually, that has a hole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. So that kind of beanbag is what I'm talking about. And, yeah, so people play – it's the funny thing is, you know, I lived in northern Indiana for several years, and then I moved down here to Lafayette, which is, like, sort of central northern. And I only really became aware of cornhole when I moved down here. So I don't know if it's like more of a college Indiana thing or more of a, like, because I was from South Bend, which is very different than really the rest of Indiana. Like, as soon as you leave the southern, like if you drive south of south in South Bend, and as soon as you leave the city limits, suddenly the accent changes, right?
Is it really that jarring? Wow.
It's weird. Yeah, it really kind of is. So South Bend is sort of more like northern than the rest of the state, but South Bend's like right on the border, right on the northern border. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, which is funny because it's called South Bend, but yeah, northern India. So anyway, the point is that I never really was aware of cornhole until I came down here. At least that game that's called cornhole. Yeah, so I actually didn't even know that you guys would know what cornhole is, right?
Yeah, bro, I had a good time. In fact, I enjoyed it so much that I thought when I made it back here to Kanuckistan, I looked online and I found some plans on how to build one of those cornhole boards. So my old man is Mr. Fix-It. He has a ridiculous number of woodworking tools at his house. So I think that's going to be a little summer project that I'm going to work on with the old man, and we're going to make one of these things. And I said to my wife, when we paint it, I'm going to do a stylized drawing of Grumpy Dwarf to put onto the cornhole board.
That's a good idea. Are you going to hook up like an Arduino thing or something to it?
Arduino, that'd be kind of cool to do. I think I'll just concentrate on getting the thing working first.
I don't know what you do with that. Maybe like some kind of scoring system. Like if it goes through the hole, it sends a signal and like posts something to a REST interface.
And hopefully a true REST interface at that.
Yes, it has to be to spec, right?
So on the topic of Lone Star PHP, Ed and I were just doing, believe it or not, people, we actually do kind of plan what we're talking about before we go on.
Sort of.
The thing I wanted to talk about is that we did do a podcast where we talked about why we thought people should attend conferences.
Oh, yeah.
And so instead, I want to talk a little bit about what speakers get out of conferences. So we do – I mean, I go to these things. Okay, number one, it is nice to be recognized for work that you've done for the community. That's one good reason – one good thing that speakers get back in terms of feedback, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so another thing is it's nice that someone else is willing to pay for a hotel and to fly you down there. But the reason I go is because – I want to give feedback to my peers, and also I want to find out from the more senior and experienced members of my community about whether the stuff I'm doing resonates. Is it like, is this a topic we should be concerned about? Am I way, for example, talking about all this testing stuff, am I way out in the weeds? Because, I mean, I do find that a disproportionate number of the high-end, what I would call high-end experienced developers, do think a lot about testing, even though many of them may actually not be doing any kind of testing themselves, but at least they're cognizant of that it's a good idea.
Right.
So I go to these things I go to these things more to get feedback from other people in the community to say that I've been talking and promoting these ideas, so I want to hear. I mean, I have to tell people this all the time. I absolutely want to hear your questions. I absolutely want you to come up to me after a talk and say, hey, Chris, I loved your talk. Here's the thing I've been thinking about. I'd love to help people out by saying, yes, I can help you with this, or no, I can't, but I know someone who can, and try to hook them up with somebody else.
Right.
So, the reason I think as a speaker to go is to get your ideas out there and then to get that feedback to make sure that you're on the right track, that these things that you're promoting and wanting to talk about, you're able to push them along and get those ideas in front of other people.
Yeah, right. So I definitely dig all those aspects of it. And I particularly the things where getting to like talk to people who are super smart and, and especially I think maybe – because, you know, I'm in a smaller community that doesn't, it hasn't had like a, there's not like a big, say, PHP user group or anything like that. But we're trying to do some stuff kind of here locally about, at least meeting about open source stuff and doing stuff like that. So, but it's definitely an opportunity to meet with folks who I normally wouldn't see, right? You know, I don't live in San Francisco or something like that, or you know, other sort of meccas of tech awesomeness. But so it's you get to, you know, hang out with a bunch of people and talk to them about topics that, you know, normally they would not be nearly as accessible to you. For me, like, I think I really value as a speaker, for me, I guess the act of giving those presentations and speaking is like a, is really a key, it's part of this like, interaction thing that I really like in open source. And that the thing that I really value about it is, knowledge sharing. That's what I was trying to spit out. Is being a collaborative process, and that collaborative process of sharing knowledge openly. And so I think that doing that presentation stuff, for me, when it works, when I feel like people have come away with it and have a better understanding of stuff, and they actually got something out of what I was talking about, that is like, that's just the greatest thing in the world to me. And I really, really value that. And so for me, it's sort of like an essential part of this knowledge sharing. It's like a great, like, expression is the right word, but it's a really great way of doing that. And that, you know, so whether it's a group of like, if there's only four or five people listening to me, or a bigger group, like 100 or whatever, I really, really like just going in there, and I really feel good when I can go in and I feel like I was able to share some of that knowledge, right? And that's really awesome. And so for me, that's what I really like getting out of like the speaking process, right? So I think that you end up doing that stuff, you know, you can do that stuff on a much smaller level, and you can, you know, and you know, if you want, if you're like, oh, I wish I could speak, you know, this stuff, I think you can do that stuff on a much smaller level by just finding small groups of people who you're sort of interested in the same topic, and just sitting down and doing a little presentation. Like, even if it's like five freaking people, you know, you can still do that. We're sort of trying to do a little bit of that here in town with like doing open source stuff. And I'm kind of hoping that we'll be able to move in that direction and like start doing, you know, have people just talk about stuff they're working on. Right. And sort of do like little presentation things and stuff like that. And I think that's really part, like I said, that part of that knowledge sharing. And I just really, really dig that and really value that. And so that for me, that's what I really get about it. That's really, I really like going and speaking is when I'm able to sort of connect and feel like people gotten something out of it. That's like, it reminds me of, like, okay, this is why I did this. This is, it goes, that's just really awesome. So yeah, I'm done now.
No, that's awesome, dude. No, I think so. It's just, cool, yeah, like Sean, bro, said, anyone, and Sean Farrell knows us, having organized the DC PHP users group for a number of years. So yeah, I mean, he's right. Anyone can speak. You just have to be passionate on a topic. And I think I tweet about this, like, when you have knowledge and you're passionate, it really comes out when you do the presentation. You can really tell when people are enthusiastic about the things that they're talking about. I mean, I have seen some people at the conferences I've been to who looked literally like they were just mailing it in, they didn't really want to be there. They weren't enthusiastic about the topic that they were going on and on about. So, you know, to me, I can always tell when the person who's giving the talk is really into it and really enthusiastic.
So, yeah. You know, of course, then, you know, some speakers just suck too, but that was a joke. I'll just shut up. It's not work. I'm not on my game, dude.
So yeah, the bonuses of speaking. Also, speaking is also a way to kind of get introduced to people who are passionate about stuff the same way that you are. Because if the most of the people who are speaking, they want to get that stuff across too. So,
right.
And yeah, lightning talks is a good idea too. But sometimes the challenge is just to find something that you can crank out in under 5 minutes. I remember I did a talk about continuous integration and the benefits of it that I did at ZenCon last year. And that was a challenge to pull off in a lightning talk setting.
It's tough. I think the thing that got me to be able to start speaking on at like these conferences was doing a lightning. I was at OzCon as an attendee, and I went to a lightning talk session, and I somehow, the phrase I said before, girded my loins and got up there and gave a 5 minute talk about that thing I did, PHP SecInfo, and people seemed to like it. And I think I had proposed to go to I had sent in a couple speaking things before that and didn't get accepted, and after that I started to. So I think it's just getting out there and taking the advantages when you can, and it ended up being a cool thing. So yeah.
All right, so how are we doing for time, Ed? You still coherent, or you want to cut it off here?
Let's see here. This might be – it might kind of be a good place to stop. We could talk maybe –
All right. We definitely have some stuff to talk about for the next time. So, we can start winding up. So everybody who showed up in the IRC channel, thank you so much for your questions and your comments. It was nice that we also could do the live streaming. So thanks again to the awesome folks at Wonder Network, Paul Reinheimer and his lackey – what was his lackey's name again?
Will.
That's it. Yeah. Who did stuff. Paul's actually moving to the Toronto area.
That's terrible.
Sometime in August.
Why is he doing that?
I don't know. He's relocating. I'm not sure why. I know that he's spending July working at a kid's summer camp, and then while he's gone, he tweeted that Ninjas will be moving his stuff to Toronto. So, so I'm hoping to get him to come out to some of the Toronto PHP meetings that I help run there. So that would be cool. So let's thank our wonderful sponsors from EngineYard.
Yeah,
Engine Yard. We took your money and we did something good with it this time.
Right.
And so if you're always – Engine Yard is one of the trailblazers of platform as a service. If you're into PHP, check out their orchestra.io offering, which lets you run PHP stuff in the cloud. And we love the guys who work at Orchestra and Engine Yard. Jiwoo and Elizabeth Naramore is there, and Davey Shafiq, and they're just cranking out some really interesting stuff.
There's all those
Has been episode number 16 of the DevHell podcast. You can find us online at devhell.info. You can find us on Twitter at dev_hell.
Yeah.
As always, check out our podcast in iTunes. Please, please, please rate us if you listen to us via iTunes. We'd love to know what you think and how we can make the show better. You can find Ed and I on Twitter. You can find me. I'm Grumpy Programmer without the U. You can find Ed as Funkatron with a U. As always, we welcome your questions, your feedback, your complaints, and all sorts of other shit we'll ignore. Guys, have yourself an awesome 4th of July.
Thanks. We can't blow anything up here in Indiana. Well, at least in our part, because we have a drought. No fireworks are banned.
And here I thought America was home of the free.
I know. We might have to start that War 1812 again. And maybe,
you're going to come up and invade Canada just so you can do some fireworks. That would be awesome.
Get our ass kicked back across the border. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, have a good night, guys. Thanks for coming in.
All right. See you, everybody.